Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 183 for comics originally released on February 9th, 2011. Starting us off in DC is Adventure Comics 523. This is featuring the Legion Academy, and it's the first issue to do so. I'm a big fan of the Legion Academy, so I was happy to see this getting featured.
I like this a lot better than the last several issues that had been in Adventure Comics. The last probably four or five issues were okay, I thought, but weren't that great. And doing the Legion Academy as a focus, I think, was a really good idea.
Well, and I think the way they did this with kind of a new student going to the academy gives it a good jumping on point aspect to it. Because she's kind of narrating, it's like, okay, I'm going to this new world, it's called Earth, here's all this, and kind of introducing people to the 31st century. And I thought that was, a little obvious that it was being done, but it was effective, so it worked.
Yeah. And there are going to be comparisons, I'm sure, to Avengers Academy. And there are parallels. I mean, you've got a lot of new characters. At least I think that they're new characters. I haven't seen most of these characters that are introduced here before. Dragon Wing, Chemical Kid, Variable Lad, and the like.
And I think some of them have shown up before. Comet Queen, I know, has. I'm thinking Dragon Wing and Gravity Kid. Chemical Kid, I think, might be new, but I'm not sure.
Now, they're new to me. I don't remember if they were, featured for a page or two or an issue or two or something somewhere. I like them, though. I like Night Girl as one of the instructors.
Yeah.
Duo Damsel and Duplicate Boy. You didn't get a lot of Duplicate Boy in this issue, but Duo Damsel, they had some nice characterization on her.
Actually, it's Duplicate Girl. It's not Duo Damsel. And there's a key aspect of that in, because that actually confused me for a bit when she started duplicating beyond just the two. I'm like, when did she get that? Because this is the original version of Triplicate Girl that used to only be able to split to three. But the Mark Waid version of the character used to be able to split into three like multiple times to the point of populating a planet. So I'm like, okay, when did this happen again? And a lot of things kind of happened in the Legion of Three Worlds. And part of it was her having this power, because if you recall, the original one, and at first I didn't, I'll be honest, I had to look at Wikipedia to refresh my memory. The original Duo Damsel had another body killed off, I think, in the Lightning Saga. Her final body, one under the name Una, during Countdown. And
What I was remembering.
Yeah.
I was remembering the one who started as Triplicate Girl and had the thing done. Now that you mention it, she is Duplicate Girl. And I did, I thought it was funny that one panel I saw like more than two of her, and I thought, is there like something with the art here? So I'm glad you mentioned that. It's like you blink and it's like they change things.
Well,
even when you're reading the stuff the whole time.
Well, they snuck in a couple of things in Legion of Three Worlds, such as Night Girl actually being a Legionnaire. Because before, she was a sub, she was associated with them, but not an actual member. Here, she's an actual member. And again, this little shift with Duplicate Girl, which I think works great. But it's like, again, when did that happen? And I'd have been just, frankly, a bit, confused because I couldn't remember it all if it hadn't have been for that Wikipedia article. But man, you read through that and you just see how convoluted a comic book character's history can get. It's like, okay, then this happened, then the reboot, then this happened, then this happened, and then it's like, okay. But the nice thing with this issue is you don't have to know any of that. Whether you have ever seen any of these characters before or this is your first comic you're ever reading, I think they give you all the information you need in this to get going, and I really liked that. I thought this was a good way to introduce a couple of new characters and really revisit a lot of established characters that we haven't seen in a while or used like this in a while.
I think this will be a good series for people to pick up that are fans of those, you know, kind of like that young heroes in training genre of comics. You know, if you're a fan of books like Young Avengers, Avengers Academy, Avengers Initiative,
X-Men.
X-Men first, you know, some of the X-Men books that focus on the younger characters.
I mean, there's an aspect of this that harken back to the original concept of X-Men, you know, and it's not necessarily just younger characters, because while these are, you know, college age-ish, I don't think it's the teen angst aspect that you get on some of the other books at times. Overall, I thought this was really good. I thought it was above average, but not, oh my god, decisively so. So for me, it made it into that four category, but not as a, you know, incredibly strong, verging on a five or anything. It kind of got in there, got, you know, up to kind of that midpoint of a four or whatever. It was a good jumping on point, as promised. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good use of the characters, and I want to see more.
I'm in the same boat. I gave it a four. I will also mention that the Phil Jimenez art was really nice in this issue.
Yeah, it was good to see him back doing comics and stuff, because I think it's been a while since we've seen, you know, monthly art out of him.
With Andy Lanning on the inks, too.
Oh, I hadn't even noticed that.
Interesting, you know, to note, since you usually see him, you know, writing with Dan Abnett, and, you know, him getting back to doing the art is kind of cool, too.
Well, the nice thing with that is, if for some reason, and I hope it doesn't happen, but if Paul Levitz were to say, hey, I need to cut back a book, and this would be the one he might do, that means Lanning is obviously seen what's going on and would be able to step in and take over. Because Abnett and Lanning did a run on Legion for a very brief period of time, but it was really good, I mean, unsurprisingly. So it's kind of nice to know he's having to keep tabs on this story just because he's inking it, if nothing else.
Yep. So, you know, definitely it's a book for people to check out. It's if you like Legion at all, but maybe want to start at a good jumping on point, this would be one.
Or if you've been scared off from the Legion because, gee, it's got too many characters, not, you know, hard to get into or whatever, this may be a good entry ramp into that corner of the DC universe, or, you know, in this case, that century of the DC universe, because it's got a very finite cast. It is a very good jumping on point. It would introduce you to the Legion Academy, a couple of Legionnaires. It might be a good stepping stone into the Legion.
Move on to Marvel.
Yeah.
We've got the all-new, all-different Power Man and Iron Fist, number one of a five-issue limited series. I had kind of mixed feelings on this. I thought it was a good issue. I thought it was well done from a craft standpoint. You know, it was well written by Fred Van Lente. The art was really nice. I liked the art. I liked the panel flow and everything. And what I didn't like in it was the new Power Man character. And it has nothing to do with the writing or anything. I just don't like this character.
Well,
he is, in my opinion, unlikable. And he's written as an unlikable character, so
to do with the writing then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least I think that they're trying to make him kind of a jerk, you know, but I just don't like him.
Well, I mean, Power Man's attitude is just kind of a bit cliche and, like you said, really annoying and not in a good way. He is just so easily racially offended. You know, oh, I'm not going to call you Master to Iron Fist and all this kind of... It's like Iron Fist isn't trying to pull any racial kind of stuff here, you know? And it's just so...
It's just, you know, some of the cliche also, you know, cocky student where he does stuff that he's not supposed to. He's, you know, just kind of purposely being defiant. He's like that defiant youth template of a character kind of taken a couple of notches up.
Yeah.
You know, he'll do stuff that he knows he shouldn't be doing just because he knows he shouldn't be doing it.
Well, and like you said, it's the expected... you know, path for that kind of a character. And it's uninspired at best. It's overplayed, which makes it a bit more annoying. And he makes, on the one hand, for an interesting, you know, counterpart or juxtaposition with Iron Fist, but it's almost like there's a forced friction there that the Power Man character's intentionally trying to put into the relationship that it's like, come on, just chill out, relax, and grow up a little. And it's a young character, but I don't think it's that young. I mean, this guy is, what, 17, 18?
Something like that.
But he's almost playing like a rebellious 14-year-old or something.
Well, I mean, they're playing him almost like Damien or something, you know, over in Batman, you know, where he's just being annoying. Although the Damien character, for some reason, doesn't annoy me as much as this character does.
Well, because the Damien character is a bit more competent, has a bit sharper of a tongue, and is a bit more entertaining in his rebelliousness.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy is just kind of blatant.
Irritating. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't, you know, to some extent, it's the choice that, that Van Lente has made here to make this character like this, and he's doing a good job of making him annoying, I guess, if that's his intent. But I'm kind of like, I don't really want to read about this guy.
I don't recall if Van Lente wrote the other stuff where Power Man was introduced. So it may be that he has kind of inherited this character
right.
in that respect. He may have written that stuff too. I don't recall. But Power Man was certainly not the highlight of the issue for me. To a certain degree, he was the low light. Right there, kind of in the middle, is Iron Fist, who I've enjoyed a lot. The one question I had on that is if you flip to the staple, there is a scene with Iron Fist there, you know, coming out of that flashback. And I'm like, well, wait a sec. This scene, that panel on the bottom page,
yep.
kind of flies in the face of what's been going on, you know, with his relationship with Misty Knight. I mean, I saw that and I'm like, wait a sec, what's going on here? You know, because basically what's happening is he is in bed with Joy Meacham, who's kind of the secretary administrator or, you know, the business person behind the New Heroes for Hire. And I'm like, well, wait a sec, I was really sure Iron Fist was still in a relationship with Misty Knight. Maybe it's on the rocks, no doubt about that. But, you know, she's still kind of pregnant with his child, so shouldn't he be a little bit more faithful or something? It really didn't work for me.
Now, I haven't read every comic that Iron Fist has been in, so I didn't know if that was something that was established somewhere else or not, so I kind of just rolled with it. It didn't, you know, I just said, okay. I kind of went with it, but you raise a good point if that hasn't been established somewhere. But, well, you know, in the context of not having all the context coming into this issue, I just kind of like went with it. Because, I mean, I know who Joy is from the past, and, you know, it's kind of like, duh. She's the Meacham part of Rand Meacham at this point anyway, right?
Yeah. Well, and fans of Iron Fist should be checking out the Heroes for Hire series, particularly issues 3 and 4, because he's in number 3, and it looks like number 4 might actually address what's going on with him and Misty. But I read that after I read this, and I made a point of doing so. It's like, well, wait a sec, maybe they addressed it over there. And it's not a big deal. They do it, again, kind of tastefully. It's not like, you know, it's a gratuitous scene or anything, but it's something that it puts some interesting spins on the various relationships Iron Fist is having.
Now, remind me, again, just because I haven't read everything, when did he go to the white costume with the yellow dragon on it as opposed to the green costume?
He's done that for a while. I'm thinking that was in the Immortal Iron Fist series, but I could be very wrong on that.
Because I remember reading the Immortal Iron Fist series. I remember enjoying it. For most of that series, he was wearing the green. Now, maybe there was a story at the end of that he switched, and I just don't have a clear remembrance of it.
I'm almost wondering if that was when like Fraction got off and the other writer came on.
Yeah, I'll have to go back
and look
at that.
I don't know.
I don't remember that clearly. I mean, I have good remembrance of the early issues of the Fraction run because they were really good, and I remember not liking it as much after he was off.
He's been in the white costume, though, for a while. A couple of years, I think.
Yeah, I've seen him, like, in Avengers and stuff bouncing around with it, or New Avengers.
New Avengers, I think,
Yes, I was just, you know, it's his new look, I guess, and I was like, okay, when exactly did this happen?
So, I mean, the Iron Fist stuff was good. I liked it, but, again, there were a couple of questions it raised for me. For me, what really kicked this above average was when we get introduced to Noir. And she is, I thought, a really cool character, and one whose kind of what look to be dark force powers are a bit different and just inventive and refreshingly unique. I mean, she's like a all in shadow. She's got these shadow bullets that can do things, you know, like either flight discs or stepping things. It's something that it's not just, okay, she's... you've got a character who's strong and can fly and kind of the cliche powers. It's like, this is a bit more just different. And I'm kind of hoping that she's not evil or anything, but kind of just in a misunderstood, and that's why she and Power Man are fighting or whatever, because I think this character may have a lot of potential. I found her to be kind of the highlight, at least it looks to be her, of the issue for me.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting character. I don't... The short number of panels that she was in was not enough to pull the issue up to a four for me. You know, it kind of counterbalanced with my dislike for Power Man to keep it at a three, I guess. Because I just don't like this Power Man character.
I found him annoying, but I didn't find him majorly annoying, so I guess I wasn't as turned off by him. But I can see where his overstated attitude... It's like, if they could just chill him out a little bit and tone him down, it would help a lot.
Yeah, I was reading the issue and I had one of those internal monologues running in the back of my head, you know, like, wow, I really dislike this character. You know, it's like, that's never a good sign.
No.
When something like that happens.
It's one thing to not like a character. It's another thing to be, God, I really hate this character. Yeah, and again, not in a good way. There's some characters that you are... kind of supposed to hate, and hating them adds to the enjoyment of the story.
Like Vril Dox over in Rebels, as a yes. for instance.
Or even
he's
to a degree, Damian
jerk.
Over
yeah.
in the Batman
yeah,
stuff.
Damian, you know, you really dislike those characters, but I don't mind disliking them for some reason. Something about this character, I disliked him, and it just ended there. There wasn't like the underlying, you know, factor about the character that made me want to tolerate it.
Well,
so.
The role he plays in the story is not one that is facilitated by him being a dislikable character.
Yeah, it's true.
Whereas the nature of the role of, say, of Vril Drox or even Damian to a degree, that kind of antagonistic, manipulative, you know, attitude and stuff is almost required for the story position they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, hopefully over the five issues, they'll, you know, let the character grow up a bit and... he'll become a lot more, you know, tolerable. Now, for our other book, we're having to change things up because neither of us got that Sherlock Holmes Year One Number One. That's not even going to be in my next ECBS shipment, but maybe the one after that.
Yeah, I found out about that just as a FYI to our listeners who are also DCBS customers. But apparently when DCBS gets these really aggressive discounts on a non-top five publisher... so this one, I think, was, you know, like 75% off or something, that first issue of Sherlock Holmes. And actually, it's one of these ones where it's going to be discounted for multiple issues. DCBS actually worked a deal with Dynamite, and they're getting the books directly from Dynamite as opposed to through Diamond. So there is a slight delay in them getting the books. So that's why. Just something for us to keep in mind when we're picking books in
future.
That's good to know.
And it makes sense, because that way they don't have... I mean, Diamond didn't get a slice of that pie, which allows them to give that better discount and stuff.
Yeah, but, and, you know, I can wait an extra couple of weeks, you know, to get a much better discount to try something out. I don't mind that. It's just knowing is good. So, you know...
So we should factor that in when we do our picks. It's, yeah.
Exactly. So if we see, like, one of these Dynamite or Boom or, you know, whatever kind of books that have a very high discount on a first issue... You know, at least ask Cameron the question, you know, is this one likely to come out the week that it's supposed to come out?
Yeah.
But in any event, you know, so we switched over to Love and Capes Ever After, number one from IDW by Tom Zoller. We've talked about Love and Capes before. This is the start of the new series after Mark and Abby are married. And it's coming out now from IDW. The marriage stuff was still coming out from Miracle Press, right? This is the first IDW issue?
I believe this is the first IDW issue. and I believe it's also a 5-issue miniseries.
Yep.
But so, because of that, he's going to get it out monthly, which is why there'd been a bit of a gap between the last issue and this versus how it had been quarterly.
So I think a lot of the comments that I've had about Love and Capes before equally apply to this issue. It seems to me like you can pick this book up and read it and not have to have read previous issues and still be able to get a good story out of it. You know, there was a lot of stuff that happened. You know, there was a lot of really, I thought, good characterization, good dialogue, and it just, you know, Zoller's doing this 8-panel grid on most pages. He's getting a lot of story into these these pages he's doing.
Let's talk about the pacing of the story and stuff, because technically I'm going to say it's 2 4-panel grids, and the reason for that is if you look at most pages, you get that top half, you've got 2 across, 2 down, and it's okay, here's a story bit, and it usually ends on, I don't want to say a punchline, but on a punctuation point for that bit of the story. Then on the bottom half, it still continues fluidly from that, but it's the next little bit. It'd be like in the sitcom, you know, at the half the page, you would expect to have the audience laughing for a bit, you get the next little bit of the sitcom, then they laugh a bit, you know, that kind of a thing. And by doing it that way, I'm pretty sure he's working in those 4-panel chunks. He might even be putting them up on his website. I haven't checked lately, but at one point I think he was doing that. But what that means is out of these, how many pages is this thing? 25 pages. You get like about 40 or 50, because there's one or two full-page spreads and stuff like that, but about close to 50 actual story points and plot progression and things like that. And while it flows pretty seamlessly from you know, the start of the story to the end, you've got these kind of checkpoints of, okay, the story has moved forward, it's still moved forward, and it's doing so on a very kind of rapid, tight, but relaxed basis. And it's just, it's a brilliant kind of a technique that he's using for this, because it ensures a lack of kind of decompression of, okay, nothing really happened for a page or something, because you usually have, again, like I said, 2 big story beats or whatever per page, and it gives this such a feeling of the amount of content it has. I wanted to say dense, but that's not it, because it's got a very light, airy kind of natural flow to the story. But again, there's so much going on in this one issue. I thought it was this is always a highly accessible series, and you know, you could pick any issue of Love and Capes up and understand what's going on, get up to speed within a few pages, and then just love it for the rest. It is a brilliant series. You know, this was one where I thought there were just a number of really fun bits here and there, like when he's going to talk to a real estate agent because they're looking for a new place to, now that they've gotten married. Turns out that's another hero. You know, and the relationship between those guys, how that plays out and stuff. It's fun to see kind of the shop talk between the heroes that actually, you know, references kind of their civilian life and stuff and how that plays out. It's a good kind of behind the scenes stuff for superheroes.
It really is a romantic comedy with superheroes. And it's not an action packed series. You know, it's not about superheroes fighting. It's about, you know, the superhero's, you know, relationship and his love life. And that's really what the story is, but it's very charming, very well done. And, you know, just if that's what you want to read, if that's what you'd like to read, I think you're going to be very, very pleased with it. You know, and as you pointed out with the way that the story's paced and built, I felt like almost I was getting 2 issues worth of content in this one issue. You know, it's a $3.99 comic book, but it's certainly got well more story content in it than the average comic book. Way more.
Well, I think in a typical decompressed style that we get on a lot of books, everything that happened in this issue would have been a 5-issue series. Because, I mean, they set some stuff up, they go have the you know, to Darkblade's place, they do all this, that, you know, he's packed a lot of story into here, yet it doesn't feel like it's a fire hose that you're just getting blasted by. And that's the part that always floors me, is I've come to expect high accessibility. I've come to expect a lot of story content, because like you said, this is definitely at least two issues worth of a, you know, kind of a standard comic, probably multiple of a decompressed comic that we get in a lot of cases. Yet, it feels like it's coming both fast, dense, yet in a relaxed, you know, manner, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
It's not overwhelming.
No, very good. Very good issue. I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 and recommend Love and Capes unreservedly to anybody who's out there, you know, wanting a really good comic book. And, you know, the other thing I like about this is, even though it's a 5-issue series, I think this one issue kind of stands on its own.
Well, and I expect all the other 4 will, yeah, too. It'll build off of this. There, right, is history of this, but it's not baggage. It's not something that you've got to, oh crap, what happened 3 issues ago? When did this happen? They give you what you need in each bit. And I love that about this. I mean, for me, 5 out of 5, tempting to give it that 6 out of 5, because it is just brilliant. Tom Zoller, if you are listening to this, keep up the great work. Consider doing a How I Craft comic issue, because I think there's a lot of things that Tom Zoller is doing in this. And he does everything but the editing, guys. I mean, this is a one-man show. The inks, the colors, the writing, the lettering, everything. It's amazing. But I think there's a lot of things other creators could learn from in terms of, hey, mention the characters' names, you know, do establishing shots when you need to, or set the scene and stuff like that. There's a lot of story mechanics in here that are so seamlessly done and stuff. I'd really like to see Tom Zoller kind of do a, like a mini, you know, kind of a Scott McCloud kind of a comic on what does he do to make sure every one of these issues is these 5 out of 5s that they always seem to be.
Yeah, and I will add that the one thing that Tom is not doing, the editing, is something that I think is a really wise choice, because it's, yes, always a good idea to have another set of eyes on the issue helping. You know, and I don't know exactly what the relationship is with the editor on this one, Denton Tipton, but, you know, typically, you know, someone's going to say, oh, you know, maybe this bit of dialogue doesn't work, or maybe the story flow, or did you think of this, or, you know, even just looking for, you know, typos or whatever. You know, it's like editors usually do more than that, but it's just, you know, having that second set of eyes to work through the issue with him. You know, I'm guessing that also has something to do with, you know, just the overall high quality of the series each and every time he puts an issue out.
Yeah. I would just like to see him share, not the secret to his success or anything, because I certainly don't want to see other people try to clone what he's doing or something, but learn from the techniques of, again, he has an editor because, he doesn't have a letterer because, or, you know, whatever. I think he's doing a phenomenal job. At one point, I picked up a trade paperback he'd done on some other character. I need to dig that out and read through that, see if it's indicative of the same, you know, amazing level of quality. So, again, highly, highly recommend this this series.
So, what other books did you read this week? I read quite a good handful. I have a few that I want to talk about, and only the ones that, actually, there were quite a few that I read that I thought were exceptionally good that I wanted to mention.
This was another week where I got my books a day late and had some other things I was doing in the evenings. And the only other one I got to was Heroes for Hire, and only because I was trying to see if the stuff in that Power Man Iron Fist had been addressed there.
Okay, well, spoiler-free, I'll hit a couple of high points of the week. Got Spider-Man 654. You want to be sure that you read Spider-Man 654 if you're interested in reading the new Venom series that's coming out, because the intro of the new Venom is in Spider-Man 654, as well as we learn which one of the Spider-Man supporting cast becomes Venom in that issue. They actually have, and this isn't, well, I won't even say it, because you read it. Maybe we can talk about it next week a little bit as an extra. There's actually a kind of a cool aspect to the new Venom character that I really liked that I hope that they stick with and don't forget about. But I don't want to go any farther than that because I don't want to ruin the story for you.
I appreciate that.
Cinderella Fables Are Forever. New mini came out. Chris Roberson, Sean McManus art. Chris Roberson, of course, now writing Superman, wrote the first Cinderella miniseries, is writing, he's writing iZombie. He's writing the Starborn series over at Boom. He's, you know, another great, great mini we've got going on here. I really like when he writes the Cinderella character. I finished off the Driver for the Dead series from Radical. I really enjoyed that series. Kind of like the painted art was really nice by Leonardo Manco. You've probably seen him on some Hellblazer issues. He has a really nice painted art style that he's exhibiting here. And Driver for the Dead, like he says it himself in this issue, he's really kind of like a repo man for the Grim Reaper. And that's, you know, kind of supernatural fun in that. Let's see, I'll skip over those. I read The Walking Dead, number 81. That was my first one out of the box, as always. They, you know, it's that whole No Way Out storyline where stuff is happening that will ultimately, we are pretty sure, going to cause them not being able to stay in this little walled-in community anymore. You know, it's just the next, you know, we're getting set up that's going to lead us to the next evolution of the Walking Dead saga. So another great issue by Kirkman there. On the zombie front, Star Trek Infestation. You know, I read this one. I really liked it. You know, it's basically, you know, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy versus zombies. And, you know, they've got all the guys who are essentially red shirts. They weren't wearing exact red shirts. But you know what I mean if you're a Star Trek fan. And, of course, you know that whenever you got those guys wandering around, they become zombie chow. So, you know, that's it's kind of fun seeing the zombies in the Star Trek universe. I thought it was well handled. So, liked that. On the zombie front, the Avatar series, Night of the Living Dead, I really have been enjoying this one. This is kind of set in the same time frame as the first Romero Night of the Living Dead movie. And they've done a couple of series here where it's different settings, but it's that first night when the zombies first start appearing. So this one is set in Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, since that first movie happened during the Vietnam War, you know, there's Vietnam War protests, you know, there's National Guardsmen, there's hippies, there's zombies, you know, it was just great fun. I'm really liking that series. If you're a zombie fan, it's worth checking out. Another one that I checked out online that came out from Image this week is called The Little Depressed Boy. Little, abbreviated L-I apostrophe L. I checked this one out online first, and I don't know, I like this issue, and I don't know why I like it, because it's really not the kind of comic that I normally gravitate to. It's really just kind of follows the little depressed boy as he kind of goes about his mundane life, meets this girl who seems to be a lot more fun and vivacious than he is, and he's starting a relationship with her. And, you know, I really, really like this issue, but you can check it out online if you want to see what it's like. You don't, it's, you know, go to www.depressedboy.com and you can check it out. Interesting point, the art is by Sina Grace, and Sina Grace is the editor now on the Walking Dead series with Robert Kirkman. So she's also got some artistic chops. I really enjoyed her art on The Little Depressed Boy. So that's out from Image, $2.99. And then the last one I'll talk about you know, there were some other good ones, but, you know, I really, really have been liking this Warlord of Mars series. And issue number 4, I read, even though they've been slapping Deja Thoris on pretty much every single cover, because, you know, hot girls sell comics, we actually get introduced to Deja Thoris in this comic. And Deja does not wear very many clothes. This is actually a characterization that's in the Edgar Rice Burroughs books, you know, like the mode of dress of these Martians. Well done. And she is a very strong character, as we'll see as the story progresses. But I've really been liking this series. Just the narrative tone of it's very different than a lot of other comics that are out there. And it is very, it's doing a very good job, I think, of being Burroughs-y, let's say, you know, and kind of the style of the novels that he wrote. So if you haven't checked that out, you can start picking the issues up, or trades will be coming very soon. I'm sure that, you know, the first 6 issues will probably be collected into a trade that you can check out. But I actually was kind of, when I opened my box and Warlord of Mars was in there and Walking Dead was in there, especially because they're like alphabetical when I get the box, they're like close to each other. I was considering reading Warlord of Mars first. And that's the first time I've had something give me pause to snatch it up and read it prior to reading Walking Dead. So that's something to say for that issue. And that was about it. I read a bunch of other ones, but, you know, they're kind of regular. Those stood out. I think so. Join us next week when we discuss Superman Batman number 81 from DC, Silver Surfer number 1 from Marvel, and Twilight Guardian number 2 from Image.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.